talking about reviving a tired church, all right? And one of the things that we, as we were looking at the background of this letter, has to do with the audience really was Jewish Christians for the most part, who were really tired in persecution they're facing, the struggles, and there's a lot of temptation, there's a lot of pressure on them to go back to Judaism, to revert back to living under the law. So the writer is really focusing on a lot of things to emphasize to them, don't stop the journey that you've already begun. Don't go back to where you were before. You see? Don't put yourselves under that chain again. One of the things as we started the study we were talking about is the relevance of it to us today. Why should we spend the time to study this letter that was written so long ago? And one of the things that we realize is that life in the first century really isn't that much different than life in the 21st century in terms of the things that we have to struggle with. The reality is that we're all human, okay? And you know, we don't struggle with a whole lot of things different. It's just, I think one of the things we talked about back then is the biggest difference probably is the technology that we have today. We just sin a lot faster, okay? And things of that nature because we have all this technology that allows us to do things and so forth. But when it comes down to it, we talk about a threefold common denominator that links all men of all times. And why this is so relevant is because we all, whether we're talking about the folks in the first century or we're talking about people today, we all have the same problem, and that problem is sin. We all have the same need, and that need is salvation. And third, we all have available the same solution, and that is a Savior in Jesus Christ. So again, this letter is relevant to us. It is for the Hebrew Christians of that time and today who were attracted by the world, those who are struggling in their faith, those who are experiencing a loss or tragedy in their lives. He deals with that. Those who have lost their first love. You see how common all of these things are, even to us today, just as they were to the first century Christians. That the first century Christians, and much like people today, have traded the gospel for a ritual. Another one of the things we discussed. And that many have become desensitized to the need for spiritual growth. Right? Again, we see that in the early church, and we see it certainly in the church today. We talk about in this, again, we're focusing on the whole issue of reviving the tired church, but there is a price tag of revival. So the writer focuses and puts a tremendous emphasis on us to go back and refocus on Jesus. And that's really what this is all about, okay? Go back and refocus on Jesus because that's where revival comes. When we lose our focus on Jesus, there's so many other things in the world, just like there were back then, that will distract us and draw our attention away from what we should be doing. We talked about in this study earlier about curing ecclesiosclerosis. Remember us talking about that word. A hardening of the spiritual arteries. So it's the idea of realizing that for a lot of Christians, their heart just isn't in it anymore. Again, that's the struggle that they had in the first century church. With all the issues, with all the problems, with all the persecution, the struggles that people had, it's easy for us to, in a sense, kind of lose heart. And so the writer is trying to revive that and cure that spiritual ecclesiosclerosis. We talked about in the earlier part of the study of the whole issue of the Sabbath and keeping the Sabbath and the whole thing that the writer here talks about in terms of entering into a Sabbath rest, that there is still a Sabbath for us to look forward to, a Sabbath rest. And then we talked about the tragedy of Peter Pan Christians. That is, those who are spiritually immature. Mm-hmm. People who are Christians for perhaps many, many, many years, but just absolutely refuse, just like Peter Pan, to grow up spiritually. And in fact, probably, you know, you may have known people, and I certainly have known people who have been Christians for, you know, decades, but have, as I put it, have lived the first year of their Christianity over and over and over again. They just absolutely refuse to grow spiritually. And so, part of that we were looking at. And then we were looking at the frontier in the church. And that whole idea, as we were talking about, that has to do with the not being settled in the old ways and the way things are, but being explorers, so to speak, and reaching out and searching and so forth, to dream big and to take risks as God's people, where risks need to be taken. That's really the attitude of explorers. You know, if you don't want to be an explorer, you're kind of like, okay, we kind of made it right here, and we like it here, we got things the way we want it, and we're not moving any further. When you're going to be an explorer, there's risk involved in that. You got to leave the comforts of where you are and branch out and search. And for a lot of Christians, that's where they are in terms of, again, why they don't grow spiritually. Because they've kind of settled in certain doctrines and teachings. This is how we have things. This is the way we like things. We're comfortable with it. And that's one reason why we oftentimes have problems when someone comes along and talks about something that goes against the, you know, the teachings that we've accepted, the traditions and so forth. We say, well, wait a minute. That's heresy. That can't be right. Throw them out of the church. Because we've just accepted the things that have always been said and always been taught and never really learned and explored and taken the risk to search further, to see if the things that have been taught are really true. Say, Chuck. Yes.
Unfortunately, complacency can be a thing.
Yes.
It's time for it.
Yes.
That right comes to mind then, by the way, that I don't know if all you've heard the definition of failure to thrive. Okay. If a child is not touched, coddled, loved, played with, talked to, they don't thrive. If you just feed them, throw them over, is that our Christian life? Is that what we are doing to ourselves? Failure to lie, failure to talk, failure to get along, failure to exercise. I mean, basically, it's always comfortable. Oh, yeah, sure it is. But I think that's the tool of the battle.
And that's what the whole issue of the frontier spirit really is all about, is that, you know, we've gone to a certain point, and we said, okay, we've arrived, we've explored new areas, and we're, and I think in the church, we kind of like, okay, we look at all around us and all the denominations, but we're much further out than they are, you know. But then we become complacent and say, we like where we are, we're settled, and we don't have to go any further, and we don't have to search, and that's not true. One of the things that we have to realize is that every generation has to search those things out for themselves. You see, we have to challenge our young people to search, not just accept the things that we've taught them, said, this is what the Bible says, so just accept it, but to challenge and ask questions and to make that faith their own. You see, and that's part of the whole issue of the frontierism is going out and research it, study it, search it, and make it your own, so that we don't become complacent. Otherwise, you will never take ownership of the land that you are on, so to speak, being, in this case, your faith. All right? And then we talk about Melchizedek, the Pontifex Maximus, the high priest. And that Latin word we realized in this study really means a bridge builder. And so we talk about what the writer's emphasis is on the high priest being the bridge builder, the one who is the bridge between us and God, the Father. You see, and the importance of us understanding Melchizedek and the Melchizedek relationship to Jesus himself. So that's just kind of in a nutshell where we have been in this study, to kind of remind everybody that's been here, and kind of so those of you who haven't been here, you kind of see where we've been in this study and what we've been doing. This morning we're going to talk about, as I had this part going, but I don't think we actually went through all of this and finished it. If we did, we're just going to review it, okay? But we're talking about aliens. Hebrews chapter 11, verses 8. Beginning in verse 8, let me get somebody, if you would, to read for us verse 8 through verse 16 is where we want to read this morning. Can we get somebody to read that section? Lonnie, go ahead.
By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. By faith Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born descendants, as many as the stars of heaven, and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city.
Okay. So, you know, one of the things that the writer calls upon us to remember and to keep in mind in the focus here is that Abraham recognized his position in this world. He was an alien, okay? Being that, not one of these, you know, from outer space creatures, you know, that looks and acts weird, but being someone who, what? This is not our home, okay? And even to the extent of saying, we don't belong here, okay? This life that we have is temporary, and Abraham knew that. In chapter 11, the writer lists this, what I refer to oftentimes as a who's who amongst the faithful. Okay? Listing all of these people of great faith from the Old Testament times, and talking about some of the things that they did that shows that they lived their life by faith in God. And then this emphasis on Abraham, it says, first of all, he by faith, and that's the key word here, by faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger. Okay? So he was a stranger. And he, you know, he even mentions here that these things that he mentions are not just kind of casually thrown in there. Okay? Why does he say he lived in tents? Why is that so important that he had to put that in there? Yes, because Abraham knew and realized this life is just temporary. I'm not building a permanent home here. You see? And that he looked forward to. Why is that so important? It talks about the future, doesn't it? I'm not focusing my life on what's going on right now. I'm looking forward to a future. Okay? A future that has so much more to offer than what this world has to offer. right? He recognized that he was an alien. All these people, okay, all these folks of great faith that he talks about in the 11th chapter, they were still living by faith when they died. They had not received the promises yet, had they?
No.
But they continued living by faith right up to their death, recognizing and knowing that they would receive them. They only saw them, that is, the promises, and they welcomed them from a distance, he says. Okay? In other words, they didn't get up to the point of their death and they're like, well, God promised all these things and I haven't received it. On my deathbed, I just, you know, disavow God and have anything to do with it. No, they died knowing that those promises were going to be fulfilled. And they continued looking forward. They were going to come in the distance. They admitted, he says, that they were aliens and strangers on earth. In other words, they recognized who they were. And they were looking forward for better things than what they had in this life. Brian and then Ray.
The whole perspective of their entire life, they were there for a purpose. That was not their home. They were in a foreign land for a reason. They were alien for a reason. And they would know that they eventually go home. So every aspect of their life, they were looking to study. They weren't looking. They were looking to do what God had planned. And I think that's what we miss today. That we're just passing through and we're here as missionaries. But every aspect of our life should be doing something for God that we shouldn't want to say. We shouldn't want to make this our home. That we should have the same hope and future that they had, looking for that heavenly home that we know reaches, but we know why we're here for the purpose.
If we would only keep in mind that this life is temporary and all the stuff that we have and so forth, it's all temporary. We're not going to get to take any of it with us. It's all going to stay here when we go. We're not going to need it in the next life, okay? It's for our use while we're here, but that's all it is. Then that helps us to not allow that stuff to own us and make us then long to be here for, you know, ever and focus on, you know, our life right now and so forth. But we recognize, remember, it's all just temporary. Okay? Right?
Yeah, well, I agree with what Brian just said. This world is not our home. We just passing through. And it's this song we sing, our treasures all laid up somewhere beyond the blue. Mm-hmm. So that's where our treasures are. We can't afford to be focusing. It's good to have a comfortable life, we can have it, but that's not our purpose. That's not our purpose. Our purpose is to constantly seeking the Lord. And when we leave here, be with Him.
Absolutely. You know, there's a mindset that focusing on and realizing that, you know, I'm just an alien, I'm just passing through here, this really is not my home. It's a mindset that is so different from the mindset of the world. And that reminds me of a bumper sticker that I've seen before on cards that says, "He who dies with the most toys wins." And that could be more thoughtful.
That's right.
But you see, the emphasis of that is, you know, it's a matter of accumulating the most stuff in my life. And whoever gets the most stuff, they get the most points somehow. But you know what? The reality is, as you said, we're all going to die, and you don't take any of those toys with you. So you don't really win if that's your focus.
That's right.
Chuck?
I don't know if I saw another bunch of pictures that
I haven't seen that one yet. But yeah.
But if you say that, that's not. But I wonder. Also, it is our challenge and also our privilege to grasp it with the physical and the spiritual, and of course that we need to live almost everything on the spiritual. What God provides us, understanding the gift of His flesh, is what designed, is what's so precious and everlasting. it says in Scripture, but do not forget this point. Their surrounding people can forget. This is near a ridiculous point. Their friends, with the Lord, and they were like a thousand years. A thousand years is about to die. The Lord is not slow in keeping his promise. That some of his men are slow. He is patient with them. Not wanting any of it, but very much. So, those who died not seeing the promise, I'll remind you, we need to be reminded that we're not destined to go. The people who got out of Egypt are not the same people who are behind the promise. But God kept his promise.
He always does and always will. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, as Ray mentioned, you know, we have real, yeah, we live in a world that, you know, we have stuff, and there's nothing wrong with stuff in and of itself, as long as we don't allow that stuff to own us. But we realize that we're only stewards of the stuff that God gives us. We're using it while we're here. And when we're gone, what does it say? The wise man says, somebody else can do it. You know? Okay, so they recognize that they were aliens, and we are called to be aliens also. Okay? We need to recognize that status. Now, if you look into chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, the writer here, going back to, and we're going to, in the next section, we're going to study this in a whole lot more, you know, a lot more depth on this, but just for right now, looking at this, as he says, focusing on all these people of great faith that he's been talking about in chapter 11, and then he begins here with that word, therefore. Okay, what does therefore mean? Okay, you know, what's getting ready to come is hinging on what he's just got finished saying, right?
Yeah.
Talking about all these people of great faith and the fact that they recognize they were just aliens living here in this world. He says, therefore. Okay? Since these folks, that they're surrounding us, all these people of great faith, they're a great cloud of witnesses that are surrounding us, and they're cheering us on. Okay? So we need to look to their encouragement, in other words, so that we can be like them, and not lose our faith, not give up in the, you know, in the journey, and you know, and so forth. But to recognize, we've got them; they're cheering us on. Okay, and we need to follow their example. We need to, as he says, throw off all of the earth-binding weights that hold us to the world. In other words, all right. And so we need to, like them, become aliens. Recognize that we indeed are aliens in this world. When we do that, okay, what will that do in terms of our attitude and our approach to life and so forth? Catherine? Okay? Yes. Yes. Not just all these people that are mentioned here, but even those who have gone on before us now, that our family, our loved ones. But again, we're going to talk more about that in the next section. But no problem. No problem. But I just want you to know that we're going to talk about that more in depth than that. Okay? But yes, indeed. I believe that it involves all of those folks. Okay? The stadium, in other words, keeps getting fuller and fuller. Okay? There's more and more folks that are gathering in the stadium. Okay, let's talk about an altered orientation. Okay, in other words, changing or altering from a view that says, you know, yeah, this is my home and I'm, you know, this world, I love this world, to one that says, no, I don't belong here. I'm just an alien. I'm just passing through. When we recognize that we are just aliens here, that this is not our home. There are some things that are vitally important for us that we begin to realize. Okay? And the first part is that as Christians, we begin to realize that we have a future orientation. Okay, the emphasis on future. All right, and what that means is that first of all, we are released from the past. Okay, whatever has happened to me in the past, whatever I have done in the past, okay, all of my sin, all of the bad things that others have done to me, all of that is where? It's in the past, okay? And we're able to leave it in the past. You see, one of the great tools of Satan is to make the past our continual present. Okay? When we live in the past, we can never look forward to the future. Because the past holds us back. It's kind of like a ball and chain around our ankle. But when we have this future orientation, we recognize the past is over. There's nothing that I can do about it. It cannot be changed. And mostly, it is not going to define who I am. Because I have a future. Okay? Chuck? And I think that, and we've talked about this in different topics and so forth before, but the greatest tool for us to be able to do that is forgiveness. Okay? And that means we have to forgive others, okay, of the things from the past, but we also have to forgive ourselves.
Yeah.
You see, and I think sometimes that's the most difficult thing to do. You see, but in order for us to be able to really live in that future orientation, we've got to be able to forgive. And when we do that, that releases us from the ball and chain, so to speak, that the past, you know, holds us back with. Okay? So we have this, where we are with this future orientation, we're able to be released from the past, but secondly, we're not controlled by the present. Okay? We're not controlled by the present. You know, regardless of where you stand, you know, on all the political stuff that's going on right now in the country, okay? You know, we talked about this a few weeks ago, and we were looking at, you know, the voting issues and all that, and, you know, we see how torn our country is over all this stuff that's going on, and you don't have to raise your hand or anything, but let me just ask you, how many sleepless nights have you had since the election, okay, you know, over the results of whether you like them or you don't like them and so forth, and people are so upset over all this, and, you know, when you're not controlled by the present, you realize, you know, it is what it is, but what we said before, no matter who won the election, who's still sovereign? God. Okay? God is still sovereign over the whole world. Okay? And I promise you that God was not sitting up in heaven when the election results came out. And you didn't see that coming. You know, like all the pundits and everybody else. You see, he was not surprised by the results of the election. And we need to recognize that not only that, but all of the issues and all the stuff that's going on in our present world, we cannot allow that to hold us back from focusing on the future that we have in store for us. When I look at the things that people are saying and doing just over this one issue of the present conditions just in America, now, I can't help but wonder how many of them call themselves Christians and look at the way they're behaving. They're allowing the present to put in danger or to jeopardize their future. When we have a future orientation, we're not going to allow that to happen. Because we recognize that our God is much bigger than any situation or circumstance that we are facing at the present time in this world and in our personal lives.
I was just going to say, one of the things you pointed out to me has always been a sure sign of a loss of focus. And that is, when we spend more energy arguing about something that is really temporary. I was explaining to my daughter, and you know, when you're raising up kids and you're trying to explain, for them it's the first time they've seen it. You know, for, she's 16, so while she's been through other elections, she's been small enough that it hasn't really mattered to her. And she sees her
mask. She's got as a teenager, she's got opinions, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, she's got opinions. And she has very good ones, you know. But the thing is, I think, and I see her like I see a lot all the rest of us. You know, I look at her and I think, you know, 4 years from now, there's going to be another one. Yeah. And it's going to start 2 years from now.
Yeah.
So I don't mean to bum anybody out, but it's coming again. And it's going to come again, unless the Lord comes. And I see so many important needs for people in this world. They need to know Jesus. They need to, they have problems in their life that have nothing to do with what a federal government can do for them.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of things like that. And I see young people who, if we could install a focus that went beyond the moment, and that's hard for young people, because when Lydia was young, she was about 5 or 6, her favorite phrase was, if she wanted to really make a point, all my life then, you know, 5 whole years, I had shirts older than she was.
Yeah.
I still have shirts older than she was. But my point is, I guess for us, and the Hebrew writer is trying to get this through, there is something so more important, so much more transcendent than this moment, and even than our past. It's what we're headed to. And the question is not, do I hurt right now? The question is really, where am I going? Where is all this headed to? Because if there's no God, and there is a God, but if I think in my heart there's not, I have to have materiality. Otherwise, life is worthless. But since there is a God, materiality doesn't matter. And there's something way more important I need to be looking at, and I don't know what the president-elect's going to do. I don't know who's going to do what. I really don't. I don't even know what I'm going to do tomorrow. But I can tell you this, that I'm going to pray tonight. And I'll be praying in the morning. And I'll be praying tomorrow when I'm doing whatever I'm doing.
You see, this whole idea of understanding, you know, this not being controlled by the president, you know, it has to do not only with the big things like elections and politics going on across the country, but what about our personal, individual lives, and what's going on in our life at any given moment? When we're living in the present, that's going to alter how we react and respond to those things, and what we do, how we respond and react to the people that are involved in that, whether it's our spouse, or whether it's, you know, our neighbors, or our coworkers, or our boss, or whatever. But when we have this future orientation, see, then our response to whatever we're facing is going to be different. It's going to be a godly response. That's what keeps us from saying things like, I know what the Bible says, but, you know, and doing what we want to do in this situation rather than what God wants us to do. That's to me one of the biggest things, is realizing, you know, I'm not controlled by the present. Whatever this Red Sea event, and those of you who've been here know what I mean by that. You know, we talk about Red Sea events in our lives. Whatever this Red Sea event that's going on in my life is, it's only temporary. It will only at best last until I die. As bad as it may be. And then look at the future that I have to look forward to. And when we live with that kind of an orientation, a future orientation, then again, the emphasis is it allows us to respond in a more godly way, the way God would have us to, rather than the way we want to, the way the world would have us to respond. Okay? And then the third one, hang on with me just a minute, Brian. The third one is, that we are directed by a future goal, okay? And that basically says, that's what's determining my response to everything that I do in my life. It is my focus on the future. I have a goal, okay? And that is my future that is there. And that will be what determines how I respond to my wife, to my kids, to my neighbor, to my boss, to my employees, to whoever or whatever. When I have that kind of a goal in my life, if my focus is on getting as many toys as I can in this life, then my response to everything that goes on is going to be so different. I won't mind lying, cheating, stealing, doing whatever it takes for me to get as much as I can get in this life. But as Chuck pointed out, then look what you're for. Okay? Brian?
You know, Lucy and I were talking about the persecution of the church and how they looked at that and was able to get through those temporary persecutions. They were persecuted pretty hard. They were expecting, as we were talking about in class, Jesus coming any time. Mm-hmm. And they were preparing for that. So there was no issues that they were going through that was too hard for them because they were preparing for Jesus coming back. I think, like you talked about on Wednesday night, that's what we're not doing now. We're not putting that temporary to be any moment now that we need to be prepared for when Jesus Christ arrives. That is truly temporary. That we're living our lives thinking he, like you said, he's going to be here for 2,000 years, maybe another 2,000 years. So we're not prepared for the arrival. And that's what we should be doing daily, is preparing for Christ's arrival.
Any day now, we want him to come back. It reminds me of the song that everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to go right now. everybody wants to go there, but we want to live out our life first. You know, and so therefore we are not really looking forward to him coming any day. I've got stuff to do. So yeah, I want God to come back. I want Christ to return, but I want to get all my stuff done first before he comes back. And that couldn't be further from the way it should be for God's people. Chuck?
So is it strange for me to proclaim to my brethren, I say,
I just want to be quick people about it. I think we need to make sure that we live our lives in a way that we're going to be prepared whenever God calls us. We shouldn't be, you know, disheartened because God called. We ought to be glad because our time is going to come.
That's right.
But we can't be living our lives like, any kind of way you want to live it, and then expect God to do his thing when it's his time to do it. Or I'm saying, you know, boy, this is what you want to do. No, that don't work.
And the way that we talked about before is realizing that I've got to live God's life with me in it rather than my life with God in it. You know, which way am I living? And as Christians, oftentimes we feel real good about, I've got Jesus in my life. Well, fine. That sounds really good. It sounds religious, but there's a problem there. It's not your life. It's his life.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
So you need to live God's life. Dictating what you do and where you go and so on and so forth. Real quickly, let me share this with you. When we have this altered orientation, the other thing that it does is it really affects the basis of the decisions that we make in our life. Okay? So in other words, those who are living with this future orientation, make decisions about proper behavior based on our future and not on our past or our present. Okay? Now, compare that with the world. The world makes decisions based on one of three things, typically. The first is emotism. That basically says our morals should be based on our feelings. Okay? If it feels good, do it. All right? That's one of the ways that the world makes decisions. Another one is situationism. That says there are no absolutes at all, that the ends justify the means. Okay? And then the third is traditionalism. And we have a problem with this, oftentimes even within the church. That basically it says that's the way we've always done things. We don't know why we've always done it that way, but that's the way we've always done it, and we can't change it. You see? We oftentimes have trouble distinguishing between revealed truth in God's word and traditions that we have had for, you know, ages to come. And oftentimes there are laws that have been made by men where God did not make a law. And sometimes those things have actually destroyed churches, congregations, over issues of tradition and the way that things are done. And somebody wants to change something a little bit, and, you know, I've told the story before. I was told that it was a true story, but I don't know for sure, so I just pass it on as a story that, you know, the congregation that had the cloth on the communion table, yeah. And, you know, somebody, you know, one of the ladies in the church, you know, was cleaning and so forth, look at that cloth, and it said, this thing is filthy. And it had been on there so long, but she took it and washed it, and it just completely fell apart. And people that got upset because you have got to have a cloth on the communion table. Why? Because we've always had a cloth on the communion table. You see? Now that sounds, you know, kind of funny, but, you know, that's the kind of stuff that happens when you focus on traditionalism rather than upon a future world orientation. Pilgrims and aliens make decisions based on revelationism. That is, we are tuned into a voice from the outside world. Okay? A voice from the outside world. Our values are based on revelation from God, not on what the world puts forward as the things that are important. All right? Okay, we're going to stop right here. Next week, we're going to look at a topic, Run For Your Life, chapter 12, the first few verses of chapter 12. That's what we're focused on, all right? Thank y'all very much. Yes, I'm sorry.
What was the second one? The
second one is situationism, that there are no moral values. The ends justify the means. Okay? No, I will not be here next week.